Okay, we're going to begin here with the Mishnah on the bottom, Nun Dalet Amud Bet. Maser Behemah Mitztaref, Kamlo Regel Behemah Roeh. How do you know what's considered to be a single unit to bring together the 10 animals that you need to count towards Maser Behemah? Mishnah lays out, Kamlo Regel Behemah Roeh. So Rashi gives two possibilities or two interpretations of that. One is the normal distance or span over which animals will graze. That's one possibility. The other possibility is a shepherd that will look over a certain span or area, how much can he control and still have the behemoth within his purview? So that's the two possibilities of explaining this. And then the mission itself tells you what that distance is. V'kam hi regel behemah roeh, tetzayin mil. 16 mil is that span. Hayu ben elu le'elu lamed bet mil. If there's 32 mil separating them, ein mitztarfim. Now that's obvious. The Gemara asks, wait, didn't you just say 16 was the threshold, 32? But the need is for the next part. He has animals between the two series of animals that are 32 mil apart. Doesn't literally mean maybe umasran, but the middle ones will be mitzaref, the two outer ones. The Yardain creates a division for maser beima. How do we know that this is the case? I'm Rabbi Bashila, the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, O Tavarna, Hatzon, Ayude Moneh. Moneh here being the ones to enumerate the counting of the tzon. O Tavarna, Hatzon, the tzon that will pass through and be counted towards that. So that would be an indication again of this idea that if you can count the tzon in one shot, then they should go under the Shevet Litaser. Idea being that, again, it's under a single shepherd that could see over a span of space, or that the animals graze. That's a normal grazing area of the animals. Kimhu l'rabbanon. In the end, this is the real answer. The shitzar mil kashalta ba'inei deroa. That the answer is, in the end, that the rabbanon had a mesora, that was the case, that 16 mil is a area that he can control. Hayu ben elu elu shloshim u'shnaim mil in mitztarfim. Shloshim u'shnaim hu de'in mitztarfim. 32 is not mitztarif. Ha'batzir mihochi mitztarif. Less than that is mitztarifin. V'aktani tetzayin mil's threshold. Tvei lo. Above 16 mil, no. Shum dekai be'itna seifa. It's for that last piece of the Mishnah, which is, ayu lo be'emtza, maybe u'masran be'emtza. You need to do 32, because then when you have something in the middle, it's 16 to the two outer ones. V'kamo. How does it work in the middle? So I'm a Rav, Chamesh Mikan, Chamesh Mikan, Chamesh Bemta. You can have five out on the side, five on the other side, and five in the middle. The five in the middle can mitzdarif to either side to create the 10. So what Rav requires is that middle and the one of the sides has to equal 10. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says if you have five in the middle, four on one side, five on the other side, the four are nothing. You don't worry about the four anymore. Five and five to come together and that's it. It's only here because you have five in the middle that can be mitzdarif to the five on each side and create 10. Right, you could do 9 and 1. We're going to see that in the Gemara coming up. You could do 9 and 1. As long as the middle and one of the edges equals 10, they are mitzdarif. But if the other side does not add up to 10, they're not mitzdarif. Over here, you're going to end up with 15. You only need 10 for the first Maaser Behemah. What you have to do is then be a mitzdarif and wait for another five to add in. So then, but then they are a single unit rather than being multiple units. But Rav requires that the middle plus the outside equal 10. If that's not the case, they're not mitzdarif. And again, the example that Rashi gives, which is if you have five in the middle, four to the east, and five to the west, only the five to the west will be mitzdarif, the four to the east will not be mitzdarif because they only equal 9. So that would be what you're suggesting here. You have five on each side, one in the middle, that's mitzdarif. Chazinan roeh, keman dekoi hocha. We assume as if the roeh is standing with the one in the middle. And then it considered to be a single entity, a single grouping. So therefore, according to Shmuel, the only issue is the total amount, as long as each, you know, unit is within 16 mil of each other, you can count them all towards the 10. It doesn't have to be that the middle plus one of the sides is equal to 10, as long as the total group equals 10. So Meitevei, Hayulu Chamesh B'Kfar Chananya, Chamesh B'Kfar Otanai. So he has five in Kfar Chananya, five in Kfar Otanai, which are 32 mil apart. Ein mitzdarofot ad she'elo achat b'tzipori. So he has one in Tzipori in the middle, so that's a tiyuf to the Rav. That's a difficult, undermines Rav's position, makes it very difficult for Rav's position. So targum Shmuel aliba de Rav. Shmuel answered for Rav, on behalf of Rav, to explain this braita. Kagon. She'yu teisha mikan, v'teisha mikan, v'achat b'emtza. Da'ay echad l'achi b'chaz l'achi. Who says that when we say chamesh b'Kfar Otanai, and Chamesh in Kfar Chananya in Mitztarfot, the next line in the Braita says, Achielo Achat B'Tzipori, is referencing the five and five. Maybe that's a new case. Achat Betzipori is a new case, and that new case is that there's nine in Kfar Hananya, nine in Kfar Altonai, and one in the middle. So according to Rav, that would work, because then they all add up to be 10. And that's why it would work over there. You could say it that way. I guess that's what he, in the end, that's what he's saying. It's not a continuum. First part is not either not Davka, or it's not a continuum through the Braita. Amar Rav Papa. So first of all, you don't even need an animal in the middle, according to Shmuel. Even if the shepherd is in the middle, that's enough to be mitzarif them. You don't even need the roe there. If his possessions, his utensils are there in the middle, then you know that it's good enough. Why? Because he has to go there. The roe has to go there to pick up his stuff. He has to go pick up his stuff. He's eventually going to get there. If the sheepdog is found in the middle, what's the din? If he whistles, the dog comes running, so he'll never have to go to that middle spot. Or, Dilma, Zimin Diloati. Sometimes the dog doesn't listen, doesn't come. And then he has to go get the dog, so he will end up in the middle. There they leave it as a teku. What you see from here is that Shmuel's requirement is that we just have to have a necessity that the roe end up in the middle. That's it. Rav is demanding something more significant. Rav is demanding that there be something real in the middle. Real being that there is something that is really connected to something on the outside. So it has to equal 10. Between the middle and the outside, it has to equal 10, because then it's really a single unit that the Ro'eh is dealing with. It just happens to be that if it goes in two directions, we allow you to be mitzaref in two directions. But according to Rav, you have to have a significant grouping within that 16 mil. According to Shmuel, it's just the fact that the Ro'eh himself ends up in the middle at some point. Nothing of significance has to be there. He himself can mitzaref the two outsides. And again, the Braita really supports that position of Shmuel, even though Shmuel gave an answer on behalf of Rav. Now, Rabbi Meir Omer, Hayardin Mafsik, the Maaser Behema, so this will occupy us through the rest of today's daf, that the Yardin is Mafsik between what? Some Rabbi Ami, Lo Shanu El Shein Sham Gesher. The truth is, that only is if there's no bridge. Aval Yesham Gesher, Gesher Mitzarfam. The Yardin's only a Mafsik because you can't cross it, basically. Which is Alma Mishum Dolo Mikarvanhu. The issue is the inability to bring them together. If there's an ability to bring them together, if there's a bridge, then it wouldn't be a problem. Meitave, hayulo bishnei evrei hayardein elech veilech. He has flocks on either side of the Yardin. O bishnei avtilia ot. Or in two, he says small townships, cities, but they're independent cities. Kagon shel namer v'nemuri. These are two cities that were next to each other, but they were independently ruled, and therefore it wasn't easy to move back and forth. They were considered to be separate entities. Ain mitzarfim, they're not mitzarfim. Ain tzarech lomar chutz laaretz ve'eretz Yisrael. And certainly between chutz laaretz and eretz Yisrael, there they're not mitzarfim. Va chutz laaretz ve'eretz b'makom sheyesh gesher dami. There's no, when you talk about chutz laaretz and eretz Yisrael, that doesn't mean that there's some sort of geographic or topographical border, kind of river or a fence. I mean, you could just have two tracts of land, one on the inside, one on the outside. And over there it says, it's not mitzareif. So you see that the border is not about the inability to cross. It has to do with the physical borders of Eretz Yisrael. This is the reasoning of Rabbi Meir, Amar Kral. Pasuk says in Yoshua, Vayardeni gvoloto lepaat kedma. By Binyamin, it says that the Yardin will be the eastern border. So you see that the Yardin is classified as a border. Hakatuva so gvul bifnei atzmo. Gives it a status of a border. So therefore, it becomes a demarcation that divides, even though it's possible to cross it. Agmar says, wait a minute. If you say it all has to do with gvulin, in Yoshua we're full of gvulin between all the Shvatim. So what are you going to say to me? Between each Shevet, then that would be considered two different flocks because they are along a border, what the Torah or what the Navi calls a border. Elmiata, Batar Gvul, Vialah Hagvul, which is the terminology that's used in Yoshua to describe the movement of the boundaries. Hakanami, Akatova Sal Gvul Bifnei Atzmo. So we can say everywhere that there's a Gvul with Eretz Yisrael, the Torah assigns that area a Gvul, and now you can't, even if you can cross them, that won't make a difference because there's a Gvul. So when it says, Shani Hotum, Dalmar Kra, over there it's different because the Pasuk says, and now we're quoting the Pasuk from Parshat Masay, where the Torah gives the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and there it says, Zoti Elechem Aretz Ligvulata Saviv, Kula Eretz Yisrael Gvulachadhi. All of Eretz Yisrael, the internal Eretz Yisrael, is considered to be one unit. So the way Rashi reads, it's interesting, the way Rashi reads it, he says, Achar sheman an kulan, aso eretz achat. After he enumerated all of them, he makes them into one unit. Now Tosafot says, Rashi's a little strange, because the psukim we're quoting from before were from Yoshua, and now we're quoting a pasuk from Elul Maaseh. So Tosafot says, Rashi sounds like he's saying, oh, after they enumerated all the borders of the Shvatim, then they gave a single border for all of Eretz Yisrael, so therefore Eretz Yisrael is one unit. But they're not in the same place. One's in Yoshua, one's in Masay. It's correct, yes. Tosafot just doesn't like the way Rashi phrased it, but in the end Tosafot says yes. The reason is, because the Torah says that Eretz Yisrael is a single unit. Nothing to do with Yoshua, nothing to do with all the Shvatim listed out.
Stated in the fact that in Yoshua, the Shvatim are listed and enumerated separately, still the Torah says that Eretz Yisrael is one unit.
Right, you have to read it something along those lines. What Rashi is saying is that, despite that in the future there will be subdivisions of Eretz Yisrael, the Torah assigns it as a single unit. So the Gemara says, Ihochi, Yardain Nami. What about the Yardain? The Yardain is one of the items that is enumerated as a border of Eretz Yisrael. That means that the Yardain itself should be included within the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It's part of the land of Israel. It says, no, Eretz velo Yardain. Eretz Yisrael. Eretz. The word Eretz is used there. Only land is classified as being part of Eretz Yisrael. Water bodies are not classified here as being a single unit. So Gemara says, Bishlam other Rabbi Chiyabava, Hainu Duktani Yardain. Okay, now it makes sense according to Rabbi Chiyabava why he wrote Yardain. Elo the Rabbi Ami, who said that the problem here is accessibility. And not literally Yardain. Litnehu Lukulu Naharot. Then any river in the world that divides between two areas where there's no accessibility from one side to the other, that should create a division for Maiser Behema. I mean that it's a practical issue. For Rabbi Ami, it's simply a practical issue. Can I access one side to the other side? So therefore, it shouldn't be just relevant to Yardain. It should be relevant to any river that divides two areas that you can't have accessibility to the two sides. So if that's the case, why did the Mishnah enumerate Yardain? On the other hand, for Rabbi Chiya Ba'ava, we know why he picked Yardain. Yardain in particular, because that's the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It all has to do with the Psukim, and how the Psukim assign single areas or create single units. Gemara says Kasha. That's really a problem for Rabbi Ami, that it should have said any river, not just the Yardain in particular. So Gemara says, now, Kitanai, it happens to be a Machlok Tanaim about Yardain. Ki atem ovrim et Yardain arza kenan. You were going to cross over the Yardain into Eretz Kenan. It's also mentioned in Parshat Maaseh. So Arza Eretz Kenan. Over there it says you're going into Arza Kenan. So only that which is Arza, land bodies, is considered Eretz Kenan. Velo HaYardain Eretz Kenan. But the Yardain itself is not classified as Eretz Kenan. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Betero. Shem ben Yochai Omer, Harihu Omer. Me'ever the Yardain, Yerecho, Kedma Mizrocho. It says that the borders are going to run over the Yardain, Yericho, Kedma Mizracha. It's going to go out to Yericho. My Yericho, Eretz Canaan. Just like Yericho is classified as Eretz Canaan. Af Yardain, Eretz Canaan. It compares the Yardain to Yericho. Just like Yericho is classified as being a part of Eretz Canaan, so too the Yardain itself is classified as being a part of Eretz Canaan. So you see that issue of whether the Yardain is included as part of Eretz Canaan or not is a machloket tanaim. Amar Rabbi Yechana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Yardain elu beit Yericho ulmata. That the only part of the Yardain that's classified as the Yardain is from Yericho and lower. Now the question is, what does that mean? Rashi claims that what does it mean beit Yericho ulmata? Of kol ma de mashich the malam Yericho, the Yardain above Yericho, lo Yardainu. It's not classified as Yardain. The batel chashivuto. Over there it's batel shemitarei biyamim gedolim, because it mixes in with larger bodies of water. And we're going to see that in a second in the Gemara, including the Kinneret and other bodies of water that it mixes in. Now Tosafot asks on Rashi a very simple question, which is, we know that it mixes with the Kinneret up above. We know that it mixes in with the Gemara has another body of water that's up north, which is the Yama Shel Sivchi, which is also further north, a body of water further north of the Kinneret. But if you look at these bodies of water, they go into them and then they exit them. Yericho is below those areas. So if you say that the Yardain above is Batel, the bigger lakes that are above, then why is the water below it considered a Yardain again? The Tosafot does answer for Rashi and say, well, the Gemara believes that when the Yardain goes into the Kinneret, that which exits the Yardain itself, same thing with the Yam HaMelech. In the end, Tosafot just says that it's a Gzeirat HaKatuv, which is that it says what is considered as the Yardain, and they quote the Pasuk, the Darshan, that it says, Mi Beit Yericho Kedma Mizrocho. The fact is that the Torah assigns or talks about the Yardain in the context of Yericho. And therefore only from Yericho down. That's not a lot of space. Yericho is just north of Yam HaMelech, and therefore the area that you would classify as the Yarden is just the piece of the Yarden that enters into Yam HaMelech that is from Yericho down to the mouth of Yam HaMelech. It would not be a large expanse of the Yarden compared to the huge span of the Yarden. So the Mayi Hilchoto, what does it matter if it's called the Yarden or not? So Ilei Mele Noder, if you're talking about Nidarim, that a person says that I won't get Hanoah from the Yarden, doesn't matter what the Torah thinks is called the Yarden. Nidarim are all determined by the colloquial, what people say. If they call up north also the Yarden, that's considered the Yarden in terms of Nidarim. Anything that's called the Yarden by people, that would be asur to him. Ella the Maser Behema. This is an issue of the Locha for the Maser Behema. Tanya Nami Hochi, have a brayta that supports this. Yarden Yotsemi Marat Paimius comes out of the cave of Paimius, which is equivalent, or what you would know today as the Banyas. Eom Alech B'Yamashel Sivchi goes through this body of water called the Yamashel Sivchi. It's translations of the Sea of Genesire.
Or the Sea of Samachonitis.
In other areas, you're suggesting over here that it's a body of water up in the Chula Valley. U'B'Yamashel Tiberia, then it goes through the Kinneret. And then U'B'Yamashel Sodom, which you would know as Yam HaMelech. Olech V'Nofel Yam HaGadol, which is very interesting. Then it returns into the Mediterranean, which obviously it doesn't do. Goes down into and drops into the Red Sea. And into the Mediterranean. V'ena Yarden Ella mi Beit Yericho l'mato. The only part that classified as from the Yarden is from Beit Yericho l'mato. So you have a braita that supports that position that the halachic status of Yarden only applies from Yericho down to the mouth of Yam HaMelech. And that will have implications in terms of Maaser Behema, which we just said before, that Yarden is a divider for Maaser Behema. That only references that area between Yericho and south. Amar Rabbi Chiya Ba'avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shmo Yarden? Why is it called Yarden? Shared Midan. It's a contraction of Yared from Dan. Now Dan, if you remember, Dan's Nachala is actually right near here, Beit Shemesh. We live on the border between Dan and Yehuda. Dan got the Emek, the valley, places like Ayalon, Shalavim. Those areas are all part of the Nachala of Dan. But Dan had a little problem. They had a little problem, which is that the valleys were controlled by the Canaanim, and therefore they couldn't conquer those areas. And they were basically living on the borders with Yehuda, almost like refugees in the parts of Yehuda, because they couldn't conquer their area. So they eventually send out a mission in Sefer Shoftim to go out and find them a new location where they can settle. And that's where the whole story of Pesel Micha transpires. They finally go up north, and they conquer an area up north, which was Yoshev Betach. They are actually connected to a group or a nation further north in Lebanon, but they were divided by the mountains. And since they sat in the mountains, the people further north who they were connected with didn't know about them, and the people of Dan were able to conquer them, and that becomes the second Nachala of Dan. That Nachala of Dan is up where what we call today Tel Dan and the Banyas. The Banyas, which is the source of the Yarden, Tel Dan is right near there, and the excavations show that. That there was an old Canaanite city. They have excavations from the old Canaanite period. Plus, they have excavations from Malchi Yisrael, that there were palaces there. And we know that Midan at Beersheba is the span of Eretz Yisrael. When they talk about Dan, they mean Dan in the north, Beersheba in the south. In the northern kingdom, when Yerubbaal ben Nevat puts up the Agalim, he puts one in Dan and one in Beitel. So Dan, again, being that northernmost point. Dan here, that's the source of the Yarden, meaning up by the Banyas, Tel Dan. If you go up there, besides seeing the Banyas, it's kedai to see the other excavations there to see that there really was. Malchai Yisrael had palaces there, and that the old Canaanite city is actually up there. So I'm Rabbi Avla Ravashi. Atun mehata matnitula. You learn it out of there. Anan mehocha matnitula. We learn it out from here. Vayikaru lo leleshem dam. B'shem Dan Avihem. They called Leshem, the place that they conquered, Dan, after Dan, their forefather, meaning the head of the Shevet. V'amar Yitzchak, Leshem zu Paimius. And Leshem is equivalent to Paimius. So therefore we know that Dan was up by Paimius. V'tanya Yotzei, Yarden mi Marat Paimius. And we have a braita that tells us that information, that the Yarden sources out of Marat Paimius, out of the Banyas. Samar of Gana, Zichrutei di Yardena mi Marat Paimius. The source of the Yarden is the cave of Paimius. Hecha da'amar, if he says, lo shtatina maya mimarat Paimius, if he says, I'm not going to drink any water from the spring or the cave of Paimius from the Banyas, itzalei b'kula yardana, then he can't eat drink from the entire Yarden. The majority of water that comes into the Yarden is sourced out of the Banyas, and therefore this marat Paimius would not, if you asked yourself from any benefit from Marat Pamius, then you couldn't drink from any water along the entire span of the Yardin. Zichruta de dama kovdo. The blood in the body is mainly sourced out of the kaved, out of the liver. The liver is the main organ that provides the blood in the body. What's the nafkamina? If a liver dissolves, it takes on the properties of blood, and therefore, just like blood is metame ba'oil b'revi'it adam, so too over here, the kaved, once it's dissolved, takes on those properties of blood and it's revi'it adam. And we also know in terms of kashrut, in order to, liver is very hard to kasher because of the amount of blood that is in it, and that's why you have to roast it on an open fire in order to remove the blood. Zichruta de maya prat. The source of the majority of waters in the world is from the prat, the Euphrates River. Damar yudam rav. Hanodermi made Prat, someone who takes the nether not to benefit from the waters of Prat, asur b'chomei mocho ba'olam. He can't drink from any water in the world because the majority of the waters are sourced out of the Prat. Hey, Chidami, what's the case here? Ilay midamar lo shatina mi mei mei Prat. He says, I'm not going to drink from the waters of the Prat. Mei Prat hu d'lo shatina. Then he won't drink the waters of the Prat. Hamina arachrina shatina. He could drink from other rivers because we go after Lashon b'nei Adam. Lashon b'nei Adam. The Prat means literally the mere river of Prat, not anything sourced out of the Prat. I phrased it this way, I won't drink any water that derives from the Prat. All the waters in the world derive from the other three rivers that come out of Eden. That is the Chidekel, the Pishon, and the Gihon are the source for waters everywhere else in the world. Then they themselves, and the three rivers source from the Prat. So the Prat is really the river that goes Yotzei mi'Eden. And then it divides out. It sources the other three rivers, which are the Chidekel, Pishon, and Gihon. And then the Chidekel, Pishon, and Gihon give water to everywhere else in the world. Somewhere it says, Vaika Iyanto de Midlain. We know that there are springs. You go up to the top of a mountain, and sometimes you find springs of water. And we know that the Prat is down in the valley. It's low down. So how could it be that the waters up in the mountains that have springs are sourced out of the Prat? They're above it. Water doesn't travel up. It only travels down. So how could they be the source from the Prat? These are the ladders of Prat. That the water travels underground to those areas. And then it's forced up the mountainsides by these sulamot, by these ladders. It happens to be not far off in terms of springs. And the springs really do source from underwater reservoirs or water table that's forced up through small areas, cracks, or geologically active areas that allows for cracks and for the water to rise to the surface. Not far off, but they have these things called sumei de prat that cause it. Although generally the water is pretty high up near the spring, it's not usually coming from something so far down that forces it up. It's a long way for the water to travel up. But anyway, the Gemara sticks with this idea that the prat is the source for all the water in the world. V'aktiv, v'anara revi'yuhu prat. It enumerates the rivers that are leaving the Eden. It sounds like that there was 1, 2, 3, and then the fourth river is Prat. The fourth river is Prat, then how is it the source for the other rivers? It sounds like it's one of the four rivers. It's not the source of all the rivers. It's the same Prat that is the original source, meaning that the Prat comes out of Eden, and it's the middle river. The other three rivers branch off of it, and the Prat itself, for the fourth river, continues forward. It itself continues. So the Prat is both the source for the other three rivers, but it itself continues on as well. It is a river as well. Not that it gives water to the three rivers and it stops. No, it itself continues beyond the point where it provides the water to the other three rivers. This understanding of the Prat, that it was the source for the other three rivers and then continued on straight afterwards, Tosfos brings as a proof. The Piyutim that are written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. Now Rabbi Elazar HaKalir and the Piyutim, Tosfos holds in very high esteem. In one place, Tosfot calls Rabbi Elazar HaKalir a Tana. And he thinks that when Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, those piyutim, they really held them in very high esteem. But even to the point where at some points they call him a Tana, where they really believe he was a Tana, given assigned them the position of a Tana. Therefore, he's willing to bring a proof here to his understanding of how the Prat flowed from a piyut of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir to show that the Prat really is the source of the rivers and it continues to flow on. It's very interesting just in terms of historically how Tosfot reviewed the Piyutim as well as the Yesad, the Payet, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Yuval Shmo, that the Prat's name is really Yuval and not Prat, Shnemar, because he quotes the Pasuk from Yuval, Ke'it Shatul Mayim, Val Yuval Yishalach Shoreshav. It'll be like a tree that is growing on water, Val-Yuval, and on, it seems like a river or water source, Yishalach Sharashav, it'll spread its roots. So that's Yuval here, he says, refers to this Prat, to that great river. And because we're talking about over here, the Eitz is the Eitz HaChaim. And so the Eitz HaChaim obviously grew up by the river that goes through Eden. And the river that goes through Eden, over here, the Pasuk is calling it Yuval, but we know from the Pasuk in Bereshit that it's called Prat. So V'lama Yikra Shmo Prat. So why is it called Prat if its name is Yuval? Shmeimav Parim V'Rabim, because its waters expand. What does that mean? Misayile L'Shmo, that helps Shmo, Damar Shmo Narami Kibay Mivrich. That a river swells internally. The waters in the river, what causes a river to swell? So Shmo says that it's an internal thing. That the water comes out of the river itself, and the river itself expands or creates this swelling. Upligit Rav, what's the opposite? The other option is Rav, who argues, Amarav, Ami, Amarav, Mitra, Bemarovos, Adarava Prat. When it rains, the river swells from the runoff from the rain. So Rav says that when it rains in Eretz Yisrael in the west, great evidence to that is in the Prat, in the Euphrates, because the water in the Euphrates derives from the rain in Eretz Yisrael. Rav and Shmuel are basically arguing of Machloket about why do rivers swell. Rav says rivers swell because it rains. And the runoff of the rain goes into the river and then it causes the rivers to swell. Then Shmuel says that a river naturally swells. It swells from underneath, from its own source. And the source drives up the swelling of the river, not from the rainwater. And we'll see in a second that that has nafkaminot, the halacha. What's interesting over here is that the Gemara is saying that the source of the Prat, or the beginning of the Prat, is in the west, in Eretz Yisrael, which indicates that Gan Eden was found in the west, near Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to what seems to be from the Psukim, and not only from the Psukim, but what we say in Sheva Brachot, which is that it's Gan Eden Mikedem, that's in the east. So it sounds like the Gan Eden is in the east, and over here it's saying that Gan Eden is in the west. Tosfot also brings other rayot problems that the Gemara says in other places, why when the sun rises, is it red? The Gemara says, because it passes by the doorway of Gan Eden. Why when it sets, is it red? Because it passes the doorway of Gehinom. And we know that the sun rises in the east. So it rises in the east, and it sounds like the Pitzkol Shel Gan Eden is in the east. So Tosfot is trying to reconcile between these issues of how could it be that Gan Eden is in the western side of the world when we know from the Pasuk, and as well as from what we say in Sheva Brachot, the Gan Eden is Mikedem. So Tosfot answers, tries to reconcile it, that Eden Gufei is in the west, but the Pitzkol Shel Eden, or the Gan that's in front of Eden, or the area in front of Eden, is to the east. So the Eden itself sits in the west, but the opening or the extension of Eden goes into the east. That's his explanation in the end, how to reconcile between the fact that some memorots seem to indicate that it's in the west, such as over here, that the water of Bavel is sourced out of Eretz Yisrael. This next Gemara is very difficult. There's a number of interpretations, but really is the nafkamino between the positions of Rav and Shmuel. Avua de Shmuel, Shmuel's father. Now Shmuel's father is one of those people that sits at the bridge between the Tanaim and the Amoraim. The last of the Tanaim and the beginning of the Amoraim, we know Shmuel and Rav are first generation Amoraim. We know that Rabbi is the end of the Tanaim. Avua Shmuel is one of those people that sits right there in between those generations, those transition generations. That's Avua de Shmuel. Avigul the Benate, for his daughters he made Mikveh b'yomi de Nisan, he used to make them special mikvaot during Nisan in the springtime. Umafzeh b'yomi de Tishrei, and he used to put mats in the rivers for them during the summertime in Tishrei. So now the Gemara will explain why he did this. Mikveh b'yomi de Nisan, why did he make them mikvaot in the springtime, in the time of Nisan? Savar lo k'Rav. He holds like Rav. Damarav ami amarav, mitro b'marovo. The rains in Eretz Yisrael, Sadarava Prat. Then the evidence of that is in the Prat, because the river swells because of the rainwater. And what is he afraid of? Shema Yirbu Notfim Azochalim. He's afraid of the fact that the rainwater, the Notef, that which falls, will exceed that which is Zochel, that which flows. Now the question is why? What's the issue here? Rashi brings down two interpretations as to what the issue is. One is that they were Safeg Zavot. Like today, what we are nohag in terms of nida is that we consider every woman to be, in some sense, a safek nida. Therefore, safek nida, safek zava, gedola. Therefore, we make everybody wait shiva nikiim. The other part of that, a regular nida only requires mikveh. Zam and Zavah require Mayim Chayim, a live spring.
Even though Min HaTorah, only a Zav requires Mayim Chayim, a Zavah does not require Mayim Chayim, nevertheless, you have to say something along the lines here that they were Makpid by the Gabe HaZavah, that she go into Mayim Chayim in order to be Mitaher herself, out to a Zav that goes into Mayim Chayim. So even though it wasn't necessarily a requirement Min HaTorah, nevertheless, they were Makpid with those people that worked with Taharot, that they went into Mayim Chayim as well. And that's why Abu Adishmul over here insisted his daughters went into Mayim Chayim, even though it wasn't necessarily a necessity Min HaTorah.
Now a river would qualify here. The river comes from a live spring and would qualify here. But rainwater would not qualify. Rainwater is not Mayim Chayim. Mayim Chayim is something that derives from a spring in the ground. So the fear that Abu Adishmul had here was that during the springtime, when you've now come to the point where you've reached the peak of the rain runoff, that the river would not be sufficiently sourced out of a mayan after a spring, but would have a lot of rainwater in it. And the rainwater might exceed the water that's sourced out of the mayan, out of the spring, and therefore they would no longer be classified as mayim chayim. So that's the issue over here. According to one interpretation of Rashi, the issue is that he wanted it to be Mayim Chayim, and it's not because of the rain. The rain would exceed, and therefore it would be problematic. Why in Nisan? The spring, we know that. That the river's always highest in the spring after all the rains of the wintertime. Alright, that's number one reason. Rashi brings a second interpretation that says that we know by what's called Mayim She'uvim. Mayim She'uvim is water that is drawn. That is not kosher for mikveh. The only water that's kosher for mikveh is the rainwater. So there are different ways that water can enter into the river system. One is zochalim. If the water falls on land, and then it zochel, it flows down to the river. The other way for the water to enter is notfim, that it just falls, it gets poured in, it's dropped in. So the Mishnayot tell us that when it comes to mayim shuvim, drawn water, you can be makshir them for mikveh if you do what's called hamshacha. You allow them to run into, instead of pouring the water directly into the river, you take a cup of water from the tap, pour it into the mikveh, it'll be posel the mikveh. So what you have to do is you create a channel that goes from the tap down to the mikveh, and that channel is makshirit. Makshir the water, shuvim, that goes into the mikveh that's there. If you go to any mikveh today, you'll see on the wall, you'll see a channel along the wall that when you turn on a tap, that brings the water into the mikveh through that channel, that's called hamshacha. So Rashi claims over here that might have been what he was worried about, which is lishna achwina zochalim alotam shenaflu mina avim. Water that fell from the clouds, the karka. Umina karka zachalu v'kuchulu tochanar. Then they float into river. Di lo notfim mishum zochalim lo mifsilu. Because if not, the notfim mishum zochalim lo mifsilu, they wouldn't be pasul. Tamina perk mishon du tmura ha-shoeva mitaheret v'hamshacha. You draw water. If it runs on the ground, it's okay. Hanshom shich maim shuvim letocha mikveh ayudei tzinorot. And he draws it through a channel into the mikveh. So that way would be the zochalim. Here he's afraid that the notfim would exceed the zochalim. The waters that came in without the zechila would exceed the waters that came in either directly or through some sort of source that would classify them as mayim shuvim. That was only true during the times of Nisan. Otherwise, that was not true. Those are the two ways that Rashi learns what the problem is. Tosafot right away has an issue with Rashi, which is that Rabbeinu Tam says that when it comes to mikvaot, mikvaot are only allowed to be what's called dashborin. They're only allowed to be still water. A mikvah must be contained still water. It cannot be running water. Rashi assumes that the other way is true as well. That when it comes to springs or mei mayan, that a mei mayan has to be flowing water and cannot be still water. Cannot be a water that is stationary. The Rabbeinu Tam takes issue with that and says that he thinks it only goes in one direction. That eshborin de mikveh davka lemeute zochalin. That say that you can't have flowing water for a mikveh, only stationary water. Avol zochalin de mayan lav davka. Mayan's water does not have to be flowing, the mute eshborin. It could be still, it could be contained. Mayan amiteir af bezochalin. Mayan is miteir even with flowing water, meaning both with still water and flowing water. Avol mikveh miteir davka beashborin. Only works with eshborin. As Rashi seems to imply that a mayan will only work while it's flowing, not while it's stationary. And that's not the problem here. The problem is not about the stationary part. The problem is whether it's mayim chayim or not mayim chayim. That's just the Rabbeinu Tam's little horror on Rashi.
In the end, Rashi and Tosafot are not so far apart. Rashi over here is saying there was a need for Meimayan, and the rain causes a problem because rain doesn't qualify as Meimayan. On the other hand, Tosafot says that you need a mikveh. You could use a mikveh, but a mikveh is only kosher if it has still water in it. If the water is flowing, that water is not qualified to be a mikveh. The only way you can qualify to be a good mikveh is either if it's still water for a mikveh or still water of a mayan or moving water of a mayan. But over here you have moving water that's not from a mayan. So it's also problematic. And Rashi in other places, I think in the Gemara and Shabbat, also agrees with that same position of Tosafot. The Ran in the Darim brings another position in the name of the Raivud that the issue is has to do with the overflow of the river. That it's only in the areas where there was normally not a flow. During the rest of the year, if there was a flow there, even in the wintertime, you can go in there and go to the mikveh. The places where the river expands beyond its normal borders when there's rainfall, those areas to the side, or those extra areas where it rides up on the banks, that's the areas where you can't go to the mikveh. And that's what the problem was over here, that the expanded water created that problem of going to the mikveh on the outer sides of the river. Not in the center of the river, but yet to have the center of the river was problematic. Therefore, he made mikvahot for his daughters.
Okay, that's one. The problem we just said about the Nisan is that the Notfim would be Marbella Zochalim, Vavalu Megishamim Ruba. And the Megishamim will be the Rove. And that would be problematic, we saw before, because of either the problem of having it be Meimayan and not Megishamim, or Rashi's second interpretation, the problem of it being Hamshacha, water that got there in a permissible matter versus water that didn't get there in a permissible matter. What about the Yemei de Tishrei? Mafse Biyomei de Tishrei. And he put down mats in the time of Tishrei. Why did he put down mats in the time of Tishrei? Rashi claims, because in Tishrei the water is low, and there's a lot of mud on the bottom of the water. They reached the bottom of the river, and if they went into the river and they got their feet in the mud, that would be a chatzitza, it would be mafsik in terms of the mikveh. So he used to put mats down on the ground so that they would not sink into the mud at the bottom of the river, and they wouldn't have a problem with chatzitza. That's what Rashi claims. The Rabbeinu Tam argues and says that the reason they put them up was for tzniut. Today, like we use these matzeh, these mats, use them as screens, use them for privacy. In the time of Nisan, the water was very high, and there weren't a lot of people out at the rivers because they were flowing very strongly. Therefore, when they went out there, they wouldn't feel uncomfortable. They'd go to the mikveh and go in, and not rush themselves to go in the mikveh because there's nobody else around. You only made the Tishrei, the water's very low, they didn't have privacy. So he put up the mats to create them privacy so they wouldn't rush into the mikveh and rush out of the mikveh. And he says the same thing. The Gemara in other places says namal is a problem. A port is a problem in terms of going to the mikveh. Rashi there claims the same thing. The problem is that it's muddy on the bottom. And because that muddy is going to cause you in terms of a chatzitza. Rabbeinu Tam says the same problem. When they're in a namal at a port, there are always people around. So we're afraid at the port, when people are around, people will be afraid, the woman will be afraid to go into the mikveh properly because she wants to rush in and out. Therefore, and the mal is problematic because of the tzniut issue. And that's what Rabbeinu Tam says. If there's an issue of tzniut and the woman feels uncomfortable, then it's problematic because we're afraid she doesn't go into the mikveh properly, she won't do it properly because of her fear. So he created this barrier of tzniut so they wouldn't feel rushed, they wouldn't feel uncomfortable with going into the mikveh. Right, the Gemara says, on that issue of matzeh biyom et tishrei, plige didei adidei. And that argues on himself. Now, who argues on whom? There are two possibilities. Amar Shmuel, waters are only considered to be meimayan elaprat biyomei de tishrei, with the exception of prat during the fall time, in the time of Tishrei. Now, there are two possibilities of who he's arguing on. It's either Shmuel makes a statement that's neged his original statement. His original statement said that, how does a river expand? A river expands is from underneath. Over here he's saying that no waters in the world work as live springs, except for the prat during the fall time. That means that he thinks the rest of the year, there's rainwater mixed in there, and that's why they're not live spring water. But what do you mean rainwater in there? Shmuel says that the waters swell in the rivers, not because of the rainwater, but because of the mayan itself, from the waters underlying the river itself. If that's the case, here Shmuel soter himself by saying that there's no live spring water except for Tishrei, when all the rainwater's gone, and all the rain runoff's gone, that's when you have a live river and you have no worries about the rainwater. Why does rainwater matter at all? Shmuel doesn't think rainwater impacts the rivers. So that's one way to read it, then to stira to Shmuel himself. The other possibility is it's a stira between Shmuel and his father. That avuah de Shmuel that says that he made mikvaot only in Nisan, because it was the end of the Choref, and that's when the water came, that argues with his son, who says that all times you would have to make mikvot, except for Yomi de Tishrei, except for the springtime of Tishrei. So Shmuel is indicating that you needed mikvot to be made all year round, except for Tishrei. On the other hand, his father said the opposite. All year round was fine, except for Nisan. All year round it was considered Zochalim, except for Nisan, which is right at the time, the beginning of the runoff. That's where we worry about the rainwater exceeding the flow of the river. But after that, we don't worry about it. No other time do we worry about it. Shmuel says the opposite. We always worry about runoff, except for at the tail end of winter. So that'd be a steer between Shmuel and his father. Now, to your question before, you said before, why didn't you say, kama batil? So if you look at the bottom Tosfot, it says, Perish Rabbeinu Tam b'tshuva. Rabbeinu Tam in his tshuvot says, Hamatchelet mishrabu mipilei chalalim, that begins with these words, Daf agav de Shmuel vavua ovid mikvot v'yomid nisan. According to Shmuel and his father, you would make mikvot v'yomid nisan. V'rav damar mitra b'marovo. And Rav also agrees, because Rav says the rainwater causes it to swell. Kaimi b'chadashitutol. That means that you have Shmuel, his father, and Rav all saying the same thing. He says, nevertheless, lo kaim alon hochi. We don't paskin like him. El ge'idav de Shmuel damar nara mikipe mimarvith. We all like the other Shmuel that says that waters or rivers expand internally and not from the rainwaters. That's Rabbeinu Tam says, despite everybody agreeing to this one opinion except for that one member of Shmuel, we paskin like that one member of Shmuel. And then he says, Misaita le Breito, and he brings the Breito that we had before, he brings other examples, other issues which show that we believe that the loch is like Shmuel. Then way later on the Tosfot down over here, he says, Ve'od perish Rabbeinu Tam, De'ikala meimar, minadin kama kama batil. Exactly your question. It says, minadin, you could say, as the water falls into the river, kama kama batil. Afilu de divei rav, vavu de Shmuel. Ela de machmire mi peri marit ayin. That they believe also kama kama batil. There's no problem except the problem of marit ayin. Mishom gishamim. It looks like that it's all rainwater, even though it's kama kama batil and it's not considered rainwater anymore. Then there are questions on the Rabbeinu Tam Shita. He says all those questions would fall away because he would say that it's all Gzeira that started in the time of the Chachamim because of Maratayin. And everything's Batul Barov because all rivers are connected to the Yama Gadol. And if you're connected to the Yama Gadol, then everything, the rainwater is always Batul Barov. And everything can be classified as being fine waters. So that's a other way to deal with it, what you're suggesting over here, that the opinions here all revolve around gzeirot. They're not real opinions that this is a real problem. It's a problem of Maradayin. It looks like you're dipping in the rainwater, not that you're literally going in the rainwater. That's the case. Rabbeinu Tam says that the halacha is just not that way. We don't hold of that gzeirot. Because the underlying halacha is that it's mutar, because of kama batil, but nevertheless, these are their gzeirot. We don't hold of the gzeirot except for the other member of Shmuel. In the first place, Rabbeinu Tam is willing to take them all on and say that it's like the other member of Shmuel, nothing to do with gzeirot, that they ikar halacha hold that way. Iran Rabbeinu Tam suggests an alternative, which is that it's all gzeirot chachamim, and therefore we don't hold like them with regards to those gzeirot chachamim. Just this thing in the end, that Rabbeinu Tam, according to this, picks the Shita, the one Shita, which is factually less true, which is that the rivers swell because of, we know, the rainwater, not because of their internal flowing. The internal flow expands because the rainwater, the runoff from the mountains. The melting snow in the mountains causes the rivers to swell, and that's because of the rain that fell. But interesting, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that we would paskin in that way, versus what seems to be the correct position, which is that of Rav and Avuah de Shmuel, and the second member of Shmuel.
The Ran in the Darim quotes the Rif and the Rach as disagreeing with the Rabbeinu Tam, and say that we do paskin like Rav, Avuah de Shmuel, and Shmuel, and not like that one member of Shmuel that says that the water comes out from the base of the river and not from the rainfall. And the proofs that are brought by Rabbeinu Tam are from Agadato on our daf. Agadato is not a determinant of halacha. And the Ramban writes even further, you have halacha lemaisa over here. You see that Avuah Shmuel acted on that. And that's evidence the fact that the halacha is that way and not like the Rabbeinu Tam. And therefore they believe rivers do or are affected by the rainwater and would be problematic. The Rush in the Darim also rejects the position of the Rabbeinu Tam of Koma Koma Batil, because he writes there, Shekol Davar Shedarko Di Gadel, Vegam Gadel Beli Hefsek, something that normally rises and rises without any stopping point. We there, Lo Amar Koma Koma Batil. In those situations, we don't say Koma Koma Batil. Therefore, it's not a relevant principle that should be applied over here. And there's no issue of kama kama batil here. There's just too much rainwater. And this is something we've seen in Tosafot, in Avodah Zarah, in Hulin, as well as in Bechorot. This idea that maybe kama kama batil only applies to a certain threshold. Once you cross over at a certain threshold, it's almost chozer v'neor, and it's not kama kamabato. Now it overtakes the underlying water that's there. Based on that, if you wanted to go to the mikveh in a river, you would have to either know that for certain that waters that are flowing here are not rainwater. Either it's at a period of time during the year where there is no rainwater there. They're in very high locations where rainwater wouldn't affect their flow. Or that even if you know that there's rainwater, you know that they're not exceeding the flow in the river. But if you don't know that, then there's a shaila about going to the mikveh in those mikvaot, besofek, or if we have a difficult case, we sometimes rely on this Rabbeinu Tam to say that one can go to the mikveh in a river.
We'll stop here.